Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
After losing vision in both eyes 26 years ago, Adamu learned to spot engine faults through sound and touch.
That's Ifeoki Tang in Nigeria reporting. Details coming up also. African financial markets were rattled today after a U.S. airstrike killed an Iranian major general in Baghdad. An American rapper, Ludacris, says he is now a citizen of the West African nation, Gabon. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a Sudanese military plane crashed in the western Darfur region last night, killing all 16 people on board, including two women and at least two children. A Sudanese employee of the World Food Program and his family were among the casualties. Several officers were also among those killed when the plane went down in the restless part of West Darfur, which has recently witnessed deadly ethnic clashes. Brigadier Al-Hassan told VOA the plane crashed shortly after taking off from Al-Jenina Airport. He says all aboard perished, including the crew. Speaking to VOA via phone, Al-Hassan says among the 9 civilians, there were 3 legal advisors, 2 women and 2 children. And 7 military personnel also died. Al-Hassan says the remains of the victims have been collected and buried today in Al-Jenina. The brigadier says the plane was under the control of a senior pilot who did not report any technical problems during the departure from Khartoum Thursday morning. A South African photojournalist has returned home after spending 3 years in captivity with the Islamic State in Syria, his family say today in Johannesburg. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Shiraz Mohammed was taken hostage in early 2017. The charity group Gift of the Givers says Mohammed was in the country to document the plight of Syrians under the nation's grinding, brutal civil war. In December, the charity tweeted that the photojournalist had been freed and was awaiting coordination between the South African and Turkish governments to fly home. Circumstances surrounding Mohammed's release were unclear. The Reuters news agency quoted Gift of the Givers as saying the South African Foreign Ministry had confirmed it was in contact with Turkish intelligence, which had said Mohammed was with them. But the charity had received no more information. Turkey borders northern Syria, where Mohammed was said to have been kidnapped. In a Friday statement, Mohammed's family confirmed his return, but declined to comment further, saying, owing to his recent circumstances, he and our family are requesting that we be given some space. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
African financial markets were rattled today after a U.S. airstrike killed an Iranian major general, Qasem Soleimani, in Baghdad. He was the head of the elite Quds Force. Oil prices shot up more than 4% in fears of retaliatory strikes by Iran. Nigeria, Angola, Sudan, and Libya are among the top oil producers on the continent. Copper prices fell by nearly 1.5%. South Africa and the Democratic Republic of Congo are among the continent's biggest copper producers. One of the most heavily traded currencies on the continent, South Africa's rand, fell nearly 2% against the U.S. dollar as investors fled assets in emerging economies. A year ago, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari signed into law the Discrimination Against Persons with Disabilities Act to help the country's disabled. However, Nigeria's blind and visually impaired say they are still struggling against poverty and bias, with many forced to beg for a living. Ifeoki Tang reports from Jos, Nigeria.
Sitting on a worn-out wooden stool in what appears to be his workshop, 72-year-old Samala Adamu is repairing a faulty generator using very unusual tools. After losing vision in both eyes 26 years ago, Adamu learned to spot engine faults through sound and touch. When people bring generators for repairs, I touch the parts and feel them, says Adamu. After that, I can tell what is wrong with the engine. Adamu makes less than $5 on every generator repair. He says it's barely enough to provide for his three wives and 19 children, but keeps him from begging on the streets. This work helps me provide food to feed myself, my wives, and children, he says. I don't receive assistance from anyone. There are over 1 million blind Nigerians and over 3 million with visual impairments. The Nigerian Association of the Blind says many are living in abject poverty.
You can't separate disability with poverty, because most of those of us that have visual impairment are from poor homes. Had it been our parents were well-to-do, maybe we would have gone to better hospitals for better treatment and we wouldn't have been blind.
Although Buhari signed the Discrimination Against Persons with Disabilities Act into law last January, Nigeria's visually impaired, like special education teacher Liki Idris, says they still face bias when looking for work.
When I go to any place to apply for a job and they turn me down, you know, I feel so dejected. What I feel those people are looking at is the impairment I'm going all about with.
Nigerian authorities plan to follow up the Disability Act by establishing a national commission for the disabled to ensure access to education and work. Ifyok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
Zimbabwe's unemployment rate remains high, with many young people out of options in their job searches. A group of young people in Zimbabwe is working to change that. Reporter Kuzai Zenwashi has more.
Decent Pajila explains what he and his colleagues are working on.
I work with other colleagues under initiative that we have called the Team 2020, where we seek to assist employment seekers to apply, particularly those from less privileged backgrounds.
He explains there can be many challenges standing between an individual and employment. They include the lack of money to travel or to pay for internet access to find vacancies and apply for jobs. Bajila says he and his colleagues try to remove some of those challenges. He says the group is helping high school graduates apply for the government nursing program.
We did much focus on Matabeleland and the Midlands. We helped them, particularly with access to internet, because all applications are now done online and the others fail to get sufficient access to internet. In total, we had more than 300 young people that came through the process.
Bajila says the initiative used crowdfunding to roll out the program.
The reception has been quite good. People started bringing in the money. We got a lot in terms of local currency. We managed to fundraise something close to 4,000 pound. Some people were offering to say, I've got means by which I can pay bus fare for people. Some say, I'm willing to pay for accommodation. Here in Harare, we had a lady who offered the space for four ladies over two nights.
He adds that some of the support has been from Zimbabweans abroad, who paid for Airbnb accommodations for applicants who had to travel across the country for interviews. He says 150 young people the program helped were called for interviews. 60 of them have been shortlisted. Bajila says in the future, Team 2020 also will help individuals apply for training programs for educators and police and other public and private sector opportunities. Bajila says, long term, the group will be doing career guidance sessions in rural areas to help young adults get ideas for the career paths they want to follow. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Fifteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A plane crash in Sudan kills at least 16 people, including two children. A South African photojournalist has returned home after spending 3 years in captivity with the Islamic State in Syria. And Nigeria's blind and visually impaired say they are still struggling against poverty and bias, with many forced to beg for a living. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. American rapper Ludacris said yesterday he received citizenship in the West African nation of Gabon. The three-time Grammy winner posted an Instagram video with Gabon Foreign Minister Alain Claude Bilbaindzi displaying what appeared to be a Gabonese passport. "Ladies and gentlemen, I just became an official citizen of Gabon of Africa," said Ludacris, born Christopher Bridges. "This," he said, "is the greatest day of my life." He joked he's also a citizen of Zamunda and Wakanda, two imaginary African nations depicted in Hollywood movies Coming to America and Black Panther. Ludacris, famous for platinum-selling albums Chicken Beer and Word of Moof, is married to Gabonese model Odokosi Mbuginingi. Their children received Gabonese citizenship as well. Ludacris said the family also visited Ghana and on their West African holiday. In Kenya, the opuntia cactus, also known as the prickly pear, is spreading, destroying thousands of hectares of grassland and sickening animals that consume it. Kenyans have come up with a variety of methods to try to eradicate the problem plant, including breeding a microorganism that feeds on cactus and also turns it into food for humans. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Elipoli, Kenya.
59-year-old Margaret Mamai is fighting to free her land, not from human invaders, but the opuntia cactus, a spiky plant. She says the plant has destroyed her livelihood. If goats eat the cactus and its fruits, their eyes and mouth are affected, she says. The most affected one is sheep. If it eats the cactus, there is no treatment, it dies. Now, there is no place for them to graze. People like Mamai have tried uprooting and burning the plants, to no avail. In central Kenya, Philip Larpei, a community leader in El Poloi, says people are being driven from their homes. Many people have moved out because their goats and cattle are dying, Larpei says. The people of El Poloi and Munishoi, they are fleeing to other places. Many have left, he says. The opuntia cactus has spread like a weed, killing thousands of hectares of grassland. Mamai is fighting back by breeding microorganisms that feed on the cactus. The Laikipia Permaculture Center is also fighting the cactus by crushing its fruits to make juice and wine. The seeds are dried and the oil is extracted for cosmetics.
The health of human beings is good. The only problem is for the animals, the spines. It's stuck in the animals. But for the juice and the fruits, you can also eat the fruits. Good for human use.
Kenyan authorities say the breeding of insects has been somewhat successful. But according to the Fanel Mosango of Kenya's Environment Agency, they need laboratories to produce large quantities required to wipe out the plant.
That's what we are lacking, to produce those microorganisms so that they can be spread all over for them to reduce the opuntia. But it's a very slow method.
Slow or fast, ranchers like Mamai want to see the opuntia destroyed before it ruins more farms and communities. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, El Poloi, Kenya.
"2019 was a tough year for the southern African nation of Mozambique, with a violent, disputed election campaign, two devastating cyclones, a shadowy insurgency, an ongoing corruption scandal, and a visit by the Pope in which he attempted to bring this battered nation together. As the coastal nation begins 2020 with a major multi-billion dollar ExxonMobil natural gas deal hanging in the air, what lies ahead? And can this fractured nation be put back together? VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
A violence-plagued, hotly contested election, a mysterious insurgency, and two deadly cyclones plagued Mozambique this year. But a historic ceasefire deal between the government and opposition and a visit from the Pope also spread messages of peace and healing. 2019 has been a whirlwind year for the Southern African nation, and analysts say the plot will only thicken in 2020.
And of course, all of this takes place against the backdrop of this expected massive incoming windfall, which will come in the form of revenues through the liquid natural gas deposits up in northern Mozambique. So, you know, this is a contestation not just for political power in Mozambique. This is also a contestation for the control over what could be a vast reserve of wealth for the country in the next 20 years. So really the stakes are only going to get higher from here as well.
Mozambique's opposition claimed massive fraud in the October re-election of President Filipe Nyusi, which authorities deny. But the shadowy Islamist insurgency brewing in the rural north is also a main concern, says the Democratic Movement of Mozambique's Lutero Simango.
We are facing so many problems. We are facing the problem of militarization that is taking place in the north of Mozambique. I'm saying the Cabo Delgado province. And at this moment that we are speaking here, we are having military tension in the center of the country, in Mozambique, in the region of Sofala and Manica.
Observers worry that the contested election may drive Mozambicans further apart. But the ruling Mozambique Liberation Front, FRELIMO, won 73% of the votes this time, compared to under 52% in the last polls. Masterson says that shows FRELIMO still has a great deal of support, though there are concerns about the numbers.
I think that the problems really started once we saw the aggregated numbers of the registration there, which really set the platform for an election where distrust was high, concerns about the procedural sort of and the technical aspects of the elections were elevated.
Opposition politician Simango, who claims the poll was not free and fair, puts it a bit differently.
When the people's will is not respected, when the people's will is not valued, when the people's will is not taken in consideration, you are creating a situation of illegitimate government.
FRELIMO has held power since 1975, but was also one of the key brokers in the August peace deal that brought an end to decades of conflict. And that's a message that even the Pope touted when he visited the nation in September as part of a three-nation Africa tour. Peace, reconciliation, and hope. Three things that Mozambique badly needs to get through this trying time. Anita Palvio News, Johannesburg.
In Uganda, performance horse riding or equestrian sports are known as a pastime for the rich, but in recent years, less well-off Ugandans have started to embrace equestrian sports with the hopes of competing internationally. Halima Tumani reports from Wakiso, Uganda.
Adriko Jackson started working in a stable after failing to raise tuition to complete high school. Little did he know he would represent Uganda in May at the cross-country equestrian games in Gilgil, Kenya.
I grew up in a herd of cattle, where like when I could take the cattle down to the stream, I get onto the bull back and then coming out and then I chase them. And then I didn't know that, okay, I was preparing myself maybe in the future to start riding our horses like this. So now, again, going out there to compete has built up so many relationships for me.
So Jackson, you're going to trot into it.
Flame Tree Stables owner Miranda Bowser brought her first 22 horses from South Africa in 1997 to teach ordinary Ugandans like Jackson horse riding. Since then, she says, Ugandans are learning not just to ride horses, but also to perform. With the right support, says Bowser, Uganda could soon compete with the International Federation for Equestrian Sports.
Hopefully their level of riding will grow and rise as they compete inter-Africanly. So there's nothing to say that we couldn't, with the right sponsorship, get a team of Ugandans to go and compete in Zimbabwe or compete in South Africa or to go to Zambia or Namibia, where there's all FEI-affiliated competitions going on.
The Uganda Equestrian Association was formed in 2016 and became affiliated with the Uganda Olympic Committee just a year later, raising hopes for more support for international competition. President of the association, Kenneth Opedun, says though the sport is growing, there are still some barriers to overcome. Many Ugandans still see performance riding as a sport for rich people, he says, and the country needs a proper national horse arena to gain public support.
So we are planning to do a very serious stable there where we have an arena that is of world standard, and where we also get to inviting more people to come and do riding and what at a lesser cost.
Opedun says they've just one more hurdle to jump, getting certification with Uganda's National Council of Sports to be able to apply for affiliation with the International Federation for Equestrian Sports. Meanwhile, Uganda's jockeys in May will still compete in Kenya against the host and other well-known equestrian African countries such as Namibia, South Africa, Zambia and Zimbabwe. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Wakiso, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, PJ Elliott, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Host Rick Pantaleo speaks with author Amy Webb, CEO and founder of the Future Today Institute, and futurist Mark Palatucci about the latest technological and digital trends for 2020. They will also discuss the role that 9 of the biggest tech companies are playing in the development of artificial intelligence. Listen for it on Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.